I believe that we have one moment in time to finally restore the Hudson River.
You can't overdose. It's not fatal. It's safe for patients. It provides relief.
It's just baloney.
Hello, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pekas. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we'll have more on New York State's lawsuit against the US EPA over the Hudson River cleanup by General Electric. We go inside a cannabis cultivation operation in Albany County, and the mayoral candidates in Pittsfield, Massachusetts debate for the first time. Last week, New York State officials announced a lawsuit against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over General Electric's PCB cleanup in the Hudson River. And now a county executive in the Hudson Valley is joining the effort. More from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro says his county will file a friend of the court brief in support of the state's lawsuit that charges that the EPA's issuance of the certification of completion of remedial action to GE is beyond the agency's legal authority and should be vacated.
I believe that we have one moment in time to finally restore the Hudson River, and the EPA has abandoned that responsibility, that commitment, not only to the generations of people who have fought for this cleanup, but the generations of residents, businesses, communities, and all those who follow us, who will look back and will question whether or not this country, this community, was absolutely committed to restoring the Hudson River.
EPA issued the certification of completion to GE in April for its cleanup of PCBs along a 40-mile stretch of the upper Hudson River. A spokeswoman says the EPA does not comment on pending litigation. Molinaro, who has been vocal on the issue in the past, says he's in communication with officials from other counties and hopes they will join in filing such a brief.
We are simply adding our voice and articulating what the impact is to Dutchess County and the Hudson, lower Hudson River Valley, if the river isn't cleaned up. So our brief will reinforce in a very specific way what impact lack of cleanup and the EPA's failure to meet its responsibility will mean not only to those who take water and enjoy the Hudson River today, but what this looks like and would look like into the future if the river is not fully restored.
Impacts, he says, on those who rely on the river for drinking water, fishing, recreation, tourism, and commerce. Molinaro calls the EPA's issuance of the certification of completion grossly premature.
So I am not at all going to allow the county to stand on the shoreline and allow this just simply to occur.
Democratic Assemblymember Dede Barrett's 106th district includes portions of Dutchess and Columbia counties. She says it's important to have as broad support as possible for New York State's leadership on the issue to protect a river that is integral to the region's environmental, economic, and cultural heritage.
It's just crucial to who we are, and we deserve a clean river, and I don't think we should be supporting industry that's not cleaning up after itself. So that's why it's important to have everybody engaged in this.
GE spokesman Mark Behan declined to comment on Dutchess County's intent to file a brief, but in a statement about New York's lawsuit said in part, quote, EPA conducted a comprehensive review of the Hudson River dredging project and concluded that dredging successfully reduced PCB levels. No additional dredging is warranted, and GE met all of its obligations, end quote. Though the PCB cleanup occurred in the upper Hudson River, Barrett says the lower Hudson is not immune from detrimental effects of PCBs.
And I think, we need to make sure that the whole river is clean for people to be able to eat, people to be able to enjoy, and people to access the water. I mean, water is such a critical issue right now.
In their August 21st announcement of the lawsuit, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and State Attorney General Letitia James said that when EPA issued the certificate of completion, the agency's five-year review found that the cleanup was not adequately protective of human health and the environment. They said the EPA concluded that it did not have sufficient information to determine if or when the cleanup would meet this standard. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
The marijuana industry is in a time of transition in New York State. Medical marijuana is legal. Recreational marijuana is not. In Albany County, Curaleaf, New York is marking its first anniversary at its medical marijuana cultivation and processing center at the Queemans Industrial Park in Ravenna. and WAMC's Jesse King got an inside look.
We're going to go into the mom room, okay? In the mom rooms, we grow these plants as big as we can, and we take cuttings off of them. So we're not actually flowering them. We're growing them just into big plants, and we're taking those cuttings, and those are called clones. So we get anywhere from 25 to 35 clones off each mom, and the next room that we'll go in within that airlock is the clone room, and that's, consider that like the nursery.
You have to go through several decontamination checkpoints just to get into the bright airlocked mom and clone rooms at Curaleaf's 72,000 square foot warehouse. General Manager of New York Operations Nate McDonald is decked out in scrubs, hairnets, and Crocs as he nudges lanes of moms to make room for their equally sanitized visitors. Over 20 strains of cannabis fill the room, and while McDonald won't list them by name, that's part of the Curaleaf recipe, he says it's a wide range.
Some high THC, some balanced, which a mixture of THC and CBD, and some that are high CBD. Depending on what our production cycle is and what type of medication that we're making for the patients will depend how many of those plants we're going to grow.
Yep. That is pungent.
From clone to harvest, McDonald says, takes about 12 weeks. Just one of the warehouse's flower rooms, showered in high-pressure sodium lighting to simulate the sun, contains thousands of plants. Head grower Elizabeth Kaiser says the ultimate prize is the cola, a clump of buds at the top.
The cola, like, is where the most dense population of trichomes are. So the trichomes are the glands where THC is produced.
Once colas are harvested, they're dried and ground up. McDonald likens the consistency to oregano. From there, it's about processing, pressing liquid CO2 through the oregano to extract its oils, purifying it, reinserting its natural terpenes or flavors, and distilling the final oils to match the potency required of each Curaleaf product.
What you guys will see is a lot of automation in this room. So I would say, you know, automation Alex, automation Marcia, automation Seth.
McDonald's being facetious, because as technical as the rest of the Curaleaf operation is, automation hasn't yet taken hold in the medical marijuana industry. Each of the company's products is filled, packaged, and stickered by hand. Curaleaf currently offers vaporizer cartridges, tinctures, and mint-flavored micro-tablets to patients dealing with cancer, AIDS, PTSD, and more. Companies like Curaleaf are walking a fine line for the moment. New York lawmakers left the Capitol in June without legalizing recreational marijuana, even as neighboring states have embraced it. So McDonald is careful to call Curaleaf's upcoming gummy-looking Curachews oral medication, as New York State does not allow the production of edibles found at pot shops as close as Berkshire County. Dr. Lynn Porodnik says customers in New York have been heading to Massachusetts, where recreational marijuana is legal, for wider product variety.
Particularly cancer patients, old women who are not so comfortable with the idea of using marijuana. If it comes in a cookie, it seems a lot less stigmatized. So many families have found that if they just go to the border, bring back some nice candy cookies, grandma and grandpa are much happier.
Part of the massive production at Curaleaf New York is in preparation for Curachews and the company's eventual ground flower vape pods. McDonald says Curaleaf is a medical company and didn't comment on whether the company could ever transition to recreational marijuana in the event of full legalization. But Curaleaf pharmacist Stacia Woodcock says any expansion would create better access for its patients.
We'll see patients on a pain medication and then something to help them sleep and then something for anxiety and then something to keep them awake because their pain medicine makes them tired. And to replace all of that with one thing that's been proven over 5,000 years, you can't overdose. It's not fatal. It's safe for patients. It provides relief in a way that very few pharmaceuticals do, has been really rewarding.
Curaleaf New York says the current patient-to-dispensary ratio in the state is 1 to every 500,000 people. Curaleaf New York serves nearly 20,000 customers between its four dispensaries in Plattsburgh, Newburgh, Carle Place on Long Island, and Forest Hills in Queens. Reporting from Ravenna, I'm Jesse King.
The four candidates competing in this fall's Pittsfield, Massachusetts mayoral election debated for the first time Monday night. WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes was there.
Mayor Linda Tyer sat on the Berkshire Community College stage as she wraps up the first four-year mayoral term in city history. Three challengers, eager to attack her record, want to keep her from a second one.
I'm very frustrated after being on a council for so long with our lack of leadership. And let me just say very clearly that if elected, I will be a four-year mayor.
At-large City Councilor Melissa Mazzio kicked off repeated criticism of Tyer by claiming the mayor had dragged her feet and only enacted policies later in her term as part of her re-election campaign.
This is the first time as I'm knocking on the door asking for support as being a mayor that I've actually heard from a number of people who are looking for change because they're disappointed. They're disappointed because they were promised blight being cleaned up. They're disappointed because they were promised that crime was going to be reduced.
For his part, businessman Scott Graves says the city is inhospitable for much-needed new investment.
I tried to open up another business on North Street, and me, myself, and my lawyer, we sat with community development, and you know, within half an hour, well, sorry, this property on North Street, even though there's businesses around it, there's only three things that you can do. Sell something small that someone can take from this property instead of doing what I wanted to do.
A question about the condition of city streets opened the door for another candidate.
The city has not been allotting its funds toward the street very well in the last 4 years.
Retired police officer Karen Kalinowski. She told WAMC earlier in August that the condition of her street, Shaker Lane, and her frustrating efforts to get it repaired inspired her run.
This last year, yes. And I've even heard it from the city workers that are doing the streets. They've never done as many streets as in this year, which is the election year.
Mazzio tagged on to this in her response.
Well, it's not just the roads that are getting paved this year that it's an election year. There's a lot of things happening.
In her next answer, Tyer fought back.
Now, I'd like to just respond to this claim that it's only in this year that projects are happening. It's just baloney. The city council has been taking votes for 4 years on proposals that I have put forward.
She pointed to three examples of projects that she took on early in her tenure, which began in 2016.
The creation of the red carpet team and the hiring of the city's business development manager. That has been key to our success in energizing our economy. The Berkshire Innovation Center was also voted upon in the early part of my term. We've also made significant investments in public safety in the early part of my term. I'm going to promise you one thing. I will work hard in year one, year two, year three, and in year four, even though it is an election year.
The first real test for the four candidates will be a preliminary election September 17th. The top two finishers continue on to the November 5th general election. To hear the full debate and to read WAMC's live tweeting log of the event, visit WAMC.org. Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landis.
Well, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. And if you're feeling generous, we'll take those 5-star reviews. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.